It's nice to see everybody. It's nice to see such a large crowd. So I'm impressed. So thanks for coming tonight. I'm Jeff Henlon. I'm a wildlife biologist for the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. A couple things tonight. I don't know how many of you folks came and saw Paul Banik, but my pictures are not nearly as good as his, okay? But most all of these pictures are local. So this is actually Mount Hull. So just so you know, I tried to stick with local pictures. I'll try and point out the ones that are not, okay? I don't mind a few questions during the presentation. That's kind of my style. So if you have a question, feel free to answer or to ask. I'll try and answer. Yeah, maybe I'll ask you guys questions. So my hope is tonight that you guys gain an appreciation for the bighorn sheep, a little bit about what they are, where they've, basically their history, what they are, where they've been, or what happened to them in the county, and then what we're doing to keep them in the county. So this is actually, boy, I'm going to be tied to a mic now. This is actually Okanagan. This is Mount Hull. There we go. So California bighorn sheep is a species we have. Ovis canadensis, California. They're in the family Bovidae, and so they do ruminate. They're closely related to cattle, antelopes, and goats. The California bighorn sheep, the males weigh up to 200 pounds, and y'all know the males have the big curls, the big horns, and that can be 8 to 12% of their body mass, so they can be up to 30 pounds. Pretty large. The Rocky Mountain subspecies, which I'll talk about a little bit later on, the males can be up to 300 pounds, so their horns are more massive in comparison to their body as well. So takes about 7-8 years for a ram to get to a full curl. At that point, they're very, very majestic animals at that point. The California females weigh up to 150 pounds. This ram is from Mount Hull. You can see characteristic horns. And then the females, they have much smaller horns. And then lambs, of course, just nubs. Okay, so California, or bighorn, all bighorn sheep are adapted for living in rugged habitat, cliffs, talus slopes, and it's escape habitat. It's how they can escape from predators. Not many predators can chase a bighorn sheep on a cliff. And so, again, this is Mount Hull. This is also Mount Hull. You can see the bighorn sheep up there, Mount Hull. So their digits, each digit on their hoof moves independently of each other, and that helps them grip as well. This pad, kind of the back part of each pad, you can see here, is really rubbery, soft and rubbery, and allows them to cling to steep rock. And it's their hoof that really helps them stay on the cliffs. And obviously, they've got to have incredible balance as well. Boy, it's about 3 inches, 3.5. That's actually my hand, so if you want to measure my hand. So, yeah. Yeah, that's about it. Size of a hockey puck. Yeah, you're Canadian, right? Okay, I typed that one off the internet, okay? So in late fall, the rams start their headbutting. It's quite a show, puts out quite a sound when they actually do it. On Mount Hull, I've actually observed rams sparring and headbutting on top of the gravel piles at Gavin's pit. And so if you look at the pit, they flatten off the tops of the gravel piles. And I've seen the males up there sparring. So if you have nothing better to do in the fall, go to Gavin's gravel pit, watch them spar. So breeding occurs in late November to early December. Lambing occurs late April to mid-June. with a peak in May around here. So they're born a little bit before the deer start hitting the ground. The lambing habitat, as with most ungulates, you know, the ewes move away from all the others, find a safe, secure spot, kind of isolated. And for bighorn sheep, it's remote, rugged habitat. So it's talus, you know, it's top of the talus. It's somewhere safe and secure where they drop their young. They keep their young there for a few days until the young becomes pretty mobile. Within a couple days, the lambs are able to walk on the cliffs, jump, play, you know, in these steep habitats. But it's for those first couple days where the ewe keeps them there, keeps them in the isolated, secure habitats. This lamb, Justin Hogg actually took this picture. This is a Sinlehican, one of the rams or lambs at Sinlehican herd. Sheep thrive in areas where grass and shrub communities are interspersed with that rugged, the cliff and the talus habitats, or sometimes in alfalfa fields. So this is a Sinlehican. This is Mount Hull. And again, it's that forage in relation to the escape habitat. So in the summer, they're obviously feeding on grasses, forbs, some shrubs, but in the wintertime, their diet goes towards a shrub, completely shrub diet. They're also very social animals, more social than any of our other ungulates. And throughout the year, the ewes and lambs form these bands and hang together. The rams, the younger rams form ram groups, and they hang together most of the year. Except for the breeding season for the rams, it's, you know, then they're fighting. You know, they're not in a group. But the older rams, they'll form groups certain periods of the year. Spring, winter and spring is a good time to see large rams hanging out together, which is quite an impressive sight when you're able to see, you know, 10 or 12, you know, three-quarter curl rams hanging together. It's a pretty cool sight. So they're a pretty social animal throughout most of the year. Bighorn sheep are actually one of the few ungulates that it's easier to age. On the rams, and even on the ewes to a certain degree, the rams lay down rings. And so with our California bighorn sheep and the Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, those two subspecies, their horns actually stop growing in the winter months. The desert species, their horns stop growing in the summer months. But during that time when the horn stops growing, it lays down a ring. That start and stop process of growing develops a ring. And so they can actually be counted by their rings. Up until a certain age, when the rings become so narrow, they're hard to distinguish. And there's also normal rippling in a horn, which can sometimes be mistaken for a ring when you get up into this age class. But what it means is, or what this shows is, you know, your first 5 years is the maximum, or it's when the ram is really putting on the growth on in its horn. And, you know, the whole point is to get big enough to spar, to win breeding. And those first 5 years are real critical. So nutrition plays a role, genetics plays somewhat of a role, but if he has good nutrition those first 5 years, he's growing fast and he's going to dominate. And so that's, good nutrition is optimal for the rams for the first few years. So you can see the rings in this photograph here. This guy's not really broomed back. When the tip of a horn, they get worn over time, the rubbing on the rocks, the sparring with each other, and it'll actually chip and wear back. It'll break, it'll split, it'll chip, and it'll wear back. And it can actually wear back to whereas the first 2 years of growth are no longer evident on the horn. And so you have to take into account this breakage on some of these. Some of these rams have that brooming, what we call. But on this guy, he doesn't have too much. And so that would be his 3-year, 4-year, 5-year, 6-year. You know, he's 7, 8 years would be my guess from this photo. The ewes, obviously their horns are much smaller, you know, less circumference, less length, obviously less curl to them. And they lay down rings as well. Older ewes may not, their horns may not grow every year. And so it's not as accurate, the ring counting is not as accurate in the ewes as it is in the rams.
How long do they usually live?
12 years is an old ram. So there, you know, there's variances with every animal out there, but on average, 10, 12 years is a good lifespan for a ram. So the also with sheep, the way they lose their baby teeth on their incisors is characteristic for the first 4 years of life. So you can age them by which baby teeth they still have up till 4 years of age. And then after that, the tooth cementum lays down a ring. And you can actually, well, you have to get a tooth, get an incisor tooth. You have to cut it in half. And there's rings in those teeth just like a tree lays down a ring. And you can put it under a microscope and read it. And that's common in many species. Bears have that. Deer have that. And bighorn sheep have that. So that's... The cementum annuli is the most accurate way of aging a sheep, but beyond that, for the rams, the horns is the most accurate way. So, in the lower 48 and up into Canada a bit, we have Ovis canadensis, and then 7 subspecies. This, we have Ovis dalli, which are the dall sheep and the stone sheep. So there's Ovis dalli, they have 2 subspecies, and like I said, the dall sheep and the stone sheep, and they're up in Alaska, they're up in the Yukon, they're up in the higher latitudes. Down here, we have Ovis canadensis, broken into 7 subspecies. In Washington State, we have Ovis canadensis californius, the Californian bighorn, and we also have the Rocky Mountain bighorn, subspecies canadensis. Oh, yeah, canadensis. Ovis canadensis canadensis, the Rocky Mountain. And we have those in the north. Okay, so the Californian are in the center part of our state, and the Rockies are up in the northeast corner and the southeast corner of the state. So that's our distribution in Washington State. The Californians run from British Columbia all the way down to, almost Southern California. The Rockies, the Rocky Mountain subspecies, covers much more of the West. Subspecies Audubonii is actually declared extinct, and then it was determined to be extinct by the 1930s. And it's the one that went into the Dakotas a little bit. All these, the Nelson subspecies, the Peninsular subspecies, the Mexican subspecies, and the Weems subspecies are all technically considered desert bighorn sheep. And so you never hear, like, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, you know, describe them by their subspecies names. They usually call them deserts or Californians or Rockies. But the deserts are actually broken up into a number of subspecies. The Peninsular in Southern California and down into Baja and the Weems actually have some protections on them as far as listing criteria goes. I'm not sure exactly what Mexico has on them, but they're not hunted. Actually protected those 2 subspecies. The deserts, the rest of the deserts, the Rockies and the Californians are healthy populations and are able to have hunting seasons on them. So, one of my favorite stories. How did we know? Well, let me back up if I can. So, we had Californians. We have Californians here and Rockies here. Those are all reintroduced populations. By the 1930s, bighorn sheep were extirpated from the state of Washington. So the question is, how did we know we had them in Washington State? What's the evidence that they were ever here? And I got a hold of this book, which is great, The Big Game in North America by Men Who Have Hunted It. How cool is that? This was published in 1890, and this is fantastic. What I only have this one little portion that talks about the bighorn sheep. This book discusses hunting of all large game throughout North America prior to 1890 by the men who have hunted it. So there's polar bear, there's grizzly bear, there's muskox, the wildcat, which is a bobcat, elk, man, mule deer, goat, moose. It's all big game species prior to 1890. So in this story, Shields is the editor who compiled this book, but he's also the gentleman that wrote the bighorn sheep account. So he restated his account of hunting bighorn sheep in North America. And in 1887, him and a gentleman, one of his friends, he never states where he starts, but he took the train to Spokane Falls. And from Spokane Falls, he took a stagecoach to Loomis. And from Loomis, he took a horse to Chepauca Mountain. And he states why he comes to Chepauca Mountain, because that's the last best sheep hunting in the lower 48. And he recounts in his story, by 1887, Colorado is hard-pressed to find a bighorn sheep anymore, where they used to be abundant. Most of the herds in the West are declining, according to his account. So Chepauca Mountain is one of the last great places for men who hunt it. So he made this journey to come to Chepauca Mountain. So him and a friend come to Chepauca Mountain, and he harvests two rams on Chepauca Mountain. And then they move on to the Ashinola, where the Ashinola River enters into the Similkameen River 30 miles north into B.C. And there he runs into a gentleman from Victoria who has just killed 9 of the largest rams in that herd. And this gentleman, Shields, goes on to shoot 3 more rams, 3 ewes, and a ram, or a lamb, I mean. And he shot the lamb and the ewe and the rams because he wanted a whole family group on his wall. So part of why they were extirpated from Washington State was obviously overhunting, unregulated harvest. That was part of it. And then disease was also a main factor on why they were extirpated from the West. So as settlement came, so did the domestic sheep. And with domestic sheep came pneumonia. And pneumonia can wipe out a bighorn sheep herd. And so between unregulated hunting and disease, we lost our bighorn sheep in the state of Washington. But here's my plea. If anybody has the entire book, I would love to have this thing. Okay, there's my plea. I want to read the grizzly bear account. Okay, so let's change from kind of what a sheep is and kind of their history to what herds do we have in Okanagan and around us. It's pretty well not understood, but agreed upon by the archaeological evidence that the center of our state was Californian subspecies, was the Californian. Up here, there's debate on whether they were Rockies or Californians. That debate has kind of shifted towards most likely Rockies. So we did reintroduce Rockies there based on historical accounts of the fur trappers that came around and the diaries they left. So, And any archaeological evidence from Native American sites where they found bighorn evidence of bighorn sheep. So there's debate on whether that was Rockies or Californians. The debate has leaned towards Rockies, so we put Rockies in there. Down in here, it was pretty solid Rocky. So I guess two out of three were pretty accurate on. So yeah, we have put back what we thought was historically there. Go ahead. How do we know? The deserts are a little smaller, the Rockies are bigger, Californians are medium. That's the most simplest way to characterize it. You know, taxonomy biologists, you know, they get into brain cranium size, you know. They get down to the picky details. The simplest way is Rockies are the biggest, Californians are medium, and deserts are smaller. That's the easiest way. How they broke up the deserts, I don't know. I don't deal with deserts, so the desert subspecies. Again, my plea, if you ever find this book, please call me. Okay, sorry. So the herds we have, we have Mount Hall. That's one of our herds. We have Sinlehican herd. And there's a herd at Omak Lake. Those are the ones that we have within Okanagan County. Hell's Gate Reserve is in the bottom of Ferry County. Vaso Lake is in British Columbia. Manson is North Shore Lake Chelan. And Chelan Butte is by the town of Chelan. So that's what we have in the county. This is what is around the county that influences our sheep. I'm going to talk about all these individually. I'm not going to mention Manson or Chelan Butte other than one of these two herds, and we're not sure which one it is, whether the Manson's coming down to the river or Chelan Butte is just moving upriver, but we do get these herds coming into Okanagan County down here, but we haven't seen any movement from them beyond that. So we know they come into the south part of the county. They come up to Wells Dam. They're on the highway there. They're on the cliffs to the west. But we don't know that they're moving any further up valley. So maybe as the herd grows, they'll move. But right now, that's where they go.
Which herd gave you so much trouble on 97A?
That's Swakane, not my district. Okay. There was a hand in the back. Aniat, is that the Swakane as well? Yes, that's the Swakane as well. And, you know, I say tongue-in-cheek, it's not my district, but the biggest ram taken in the States come from Swakane, so I'm actually a little jealous. So. Okay. Yes, they did. We were losing 10 to 12 bighorn sheep a year, not to mention the safety hazard that presents. And so the decision was made over a number of years that a fence, after looking at many options, a fence was determined to be the best way of solving that problem. Is it an ideal way? Probably not, but it's the best way for the situation at this time. So, yeah, the fence went up. I think it was completed last year. And it's been pretty effective at reducing the collisions with the bighorn sheep. So not only is it protecting the bighorn sheep, but it's actually protecting the motorists going down 97A. So it right now it's working. It's a kind of a win-win at this point. Okay. So the Sinlehican herd is actually a very important herd for bighorn sheep management in the state of Washington, because that was the first herd to be reintroduced back to the state after the extirpation in the 1930s. So they actually went up to Williams Lake and brought Canadian sheep. And again, British Columbia was the best place. After the 1930s, British Columbia had the best populations of bighorn sheep. There was a few left in California, but British Columbia was basically the core habitat at that time for the bighorn sheep. So we brought 18 sheep from Williams Lake down to the Sinlehican herd. We put them in a 500-acre exclosure, or they did back then, and the sheep thrived. The sheep did really well. And I don't know the word Julie used, but they had a tat for tat. There you go. I'm sure they did, and they probably spoke French. So they actually came from LeClerc Creek outside of Williams Lake. We brought them down. They expanded within the exclosure. They started letting them out of the exclosure, and they continued to grow quite rapidly. So they were introduced in 1957. By the 60s, I guess over the years, we've also augmented from Kamloops and John Day. John Day was most recently as 2001 that we brought more sheep in. But after the 1957 reintroduction, they grew well, and in the 60s through the 80s, we were actually able to start or augment 11 different bighorn sheep herds throughout our state and additional states from the Sinlehican herd. So when you drive through Loomis and you see the bighorn sheep, there's actually a lot of history there. They started a tremendous amount of herds throughout Washington and other states. So there's history when you drive through Loomis. So, for some of the ones, and this isn't all that they started or augmented, but the Toucanon, the Swakane, Clemens, I forgot what that one is. But yeah, it's actually a very historically important herd that's still on the landscape today. So a little bit about the Sinlehican herd. It's actually managed solely by Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. We manage it to ensure a healthy, productive population. It's also managed for recreational hunting and viewing opportunities. And as anybody who's driven through Loomis, they view them, right? They're there. Currently, as of our last count, we estimate there's 90 to 100 animals. We try and survey the herd with a helicopter the last week of November or the first week of December every year. And this year when we flew, we counted 86 animals. You never see them all. My estimate, there's about 90 to 100 animals in the herd. We'll get to a little bit of that in a bit. Basically, from Blue Lake Sinlehican to north of Palmer Lake in the Sinlehican Valley, and then out to Spectacle Lake as well, and a little bit up Sinlehican Creek. So quite a range, actually. Do you have a question? Somebody had a question. Go ahead.
How many lambs per year do you breed every year?
That... I'd have to look at our data. This year, we had 55 ewes with 7 lambs, which was tremendously poor reproduction. So I wasn't pleased with the survey. I wasn't pleased with the results. I have a few reasons we can talk about as I go on in the slideshow. In a nutshell, I'm not sure why. They've been doing pretty good. They've been up into the 30s the past few years. This year, I don't know if it's an anomaly or if something's really going on with the herd. So we are actually monitoring the herd more closely after our last survey. So some of the challenges with the Sinlehican herd. One of the big challenges, as you can see in this 1910 to 2006 photo, is... The Sinlehican Valley is pretty narrow to begin with, not a lot of winter range during optimal conditions. And then over time, you can see that more trees, you know, if you compare down in here to here, there's more trees, more shrubs, that's less grass. A sheep will also only forage as far as he can see from his escape habitat, from that cliff or that talus. And so as trees grow up, that sight distance gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And that also limits how far they forage. You know, that limits our winter range. So naturally, we naturally have limited winter range in the Sinlehican Valley. And as the trees have encroached, we've continued to lose that. So that's one issue. Sheep in town. Sheep in town get on roads. This ram, we actually pulled it out of the lake and necropsied it, and it was hit by a car. And this is actually Spectacle Lake. So we have roadkill issue. I'm kind of surprised we don't have as much roadkill, being, you know, how many sheep you see in town. I think the saving grace for these sheep is when you hit Loomis, it's 25 miles an hour. And so it's pretty slow. And I think it's that speed limit that's protecting these sheep. We usually only lose about one a year to roadkill. Some years we don't lose any. So it's not a big problem, but it is present. Domestic sheep. Domestic sheep carry pneumonia. Pneumonia is very negative. It's very deadly to an entire herd. So if one wild sheep gets it, it spreads it to the rest of the herd. So you can lose a herd in a matter of a year, and not only do you lose most of the herd, you can lose 85 to 90% of your herd. The survivors will carry that pneumonia. When those survivors have a lamb that is not immune, that lamb gets the pneumonia from the parent. And so you can suppress your herd for up to 10 years when you have a pneumonia outbreak. We suspected, we have no way of confirming this, but from the 90s to into the 2000s, the Sin Lincoln herd was pretty low. We may have had a pneumonia outbreak. We don't know. There was no way to confirm it, or we didn't confirm it, but the population did decline. So something happened in there. It might have been that. We're not sure. So, but yeah, domestics, as you drive around Loomis, goats also transmit. Domestic goats also transmit pneumonia. So as you drive by, you know, everybody has their little three, four sheep in their backyard. If anybody, you know, has that, I would, and you live near Mount Hull or you live near Sin Lincoln, I would just suggest a double fence, make a double fence, make a barrier between the wild sheep and the bighorn sheep, and that would go a long ways. Yes, domestic dogs are everywhere. Loomis, as with most small towns, has their share of dogs that roam. The Little White Church was being remodeled about 4 years ago, and they had rebarred. They had some exposed rebar, and a ewe actually ended up being impaled on the rebar. And I was trying to figure out what on earth would chase a ewe or get a ewe running that fast and that blind to not see what was going on. And I suspect dogs, but I can't prove it. But dogs, domestic dogs, are certainly an issue. Go ahead. Right. No, I have not. What I know is sheep are not the easiest prey for wolves. Wolves may get lucky and take a few, but if the sheep can beat a wolf to a cliff, there's no way that wolf is keeping up with that sheep. So it gets back to having forage close, having good forage close to good escape habitat, and that is how you can protect your herd. So will some wolf packs, you know, learn and adapt and maybe get pretty lucky with bighorn sheep? Maybe, but they're not the easiest prey base to go after. So what are we doing about some of these issues in the Sin Lincoln? Our Sin Lincoln wildlife manager, Dale Swedberg, is doing a great job of with a thinning and burning program. So here's a before and after picture of the lower elevations of the Sin Lincoln. Here's some of the burning that he's conducted in the Sin Lincoln. What this is doing is two things. It's creating more winter range, and it's also creating more forbs, more grass and forbs. So again, we're expanding that site distance. We're creating more forage. So again, it's exactly what I just mentioned. Good forage in proximity to good escape habitat. So this is going a long ways towards bettering the herd, towards giving the herd the habitat it needs. And it's actually a very great program. We've also initiated a radio collar study in the Sin Lincoln herd. I don't know how many people have driven through Loomis and seen the radio collared sheep in town. So I don't, if you have, that was me. Actually, Washington State University put a graduate student on it. Her name is Tiffany Baker. She's done an excellent job so far. She's actually wrapped up her data collection. We captured in 2010 and 2011. We deployed, these are actually GPS satellite collars. Collars these days are getting pretty high tech. So this collar takes a GPS point once every 5 hours. It attempts a GPS point once every 5 hours. Every 2 weeks it sends that data to a server. We can access the server and download from the server. And this little black box is pretty interesting. It's actually called a blow-off device, and it was set for 2 years. And so after 2 years, it actually blows off. The collar drops, and we can recover the collar. The animal does not wear the collar for life. So it's actually pretty nice. So like I said, in 2010, 2011, we conducted the capture. This is actually Leading Edge Aviation. They're a private contracting group. A little story on them. They rotate their crew through just to keep them from getting tired. You know, mugging sheep all day gets tiring. These guys also, right before they caught for us this in 2011, they were in Minnesota, and they captured 30 moose in one day. So I have a lot of respect for these guys. So what I do, is I run the ground crew. They capture the sheep, they bag the sheep, they bring them to us. We attach a radio collar, and we sample them for any diseases is what we do. The rule I give my crew is nobody gets in that helicopter. And I've seen this guy fly. I've captured with him quite a bit now. And he's an amazing pilot. And as one of their crew members was resting and helping us, one of my crew members asked him, "How fast does that helicopter go?" And the crew member goes, "Yeah, we made the mistake of asking that one day." And he goes, "The pilot took it straight up, and then he put it straight down." And he goes, "We hit 178. They always fly with doors off. So I was kind of impressed. So my rule stands, nobody flies in the helicopter.